Good morning. Welcome, everyone, to the Ag Market Network monthly cotton teleconference. This is December the 12th. Our program is brought to you by Bayer. They are our major sponsor, and we appreciate everything we do. We have our cotton panel on today. OA Cleveland is having technical difficulty, and OA hopefully will be joining us soon. We're going to kind of make this a collective cotton panel comment until he comes on, and we'll just sort of talk about the crop report that came out Friday and any other thoughts. So, guys, who wants to start off and make some comments about the crop report?
Well, I'll start. This is John. To me, these were fairly, at least on the world side, it struck me as fairly kind of neutral, uneventful. There was mainly a large, or not really large, but there was an adjustment in the world production. Sorry for that background noise. There was an adjustment in world production that was concentrated on a 500,000 bale increase in Australia and small increases in couple other places, Central Asia and West Africa, but that was really it. So, you know, the bottom line, there were other categories were adjusted month over month, and the ending stocks was 840,000. So it was less than a million going higher. So, you know, I kind of looked at that and just said, you know, neutral to mildly bearish. The U.S. adjustment was a little larger. We had a similar pattern from last month with a reduction in the Southeast and an increase in Texas, and Texas is now 7.4 something million. And for the bottom, and I guess the biggest thing was the mill use reduction for the U.S., which it was 200,000 bales. It was offset by 200,000 bale increase in exports, but it's just sort of the appearance or the you know, the trend of the domestic use cut was maybe more serious than anything. And that had been something that I'm sure Gerald, others have been hearing more about people's commercials, but that was something even I had heard from comments that various, you know, merchants had made in meetings for the last couple of weeks or so. There was references to this decline and likely cut in U.S. consumption, and so we saw that. But anyway, bottom line was the 300,000 bale increase in ending stocks, which I would call, mildly bearish, and the market seemed like took it that way on the day of the report release. So,
Gerald, as you look at these numbers, what do you think?
I guess I find it kind of interesting. I was just, you know, since in September, world-ending stocks were estimated at 89.8, China at 50.6, which means the rest of the world 39.2. Today we're at 89.1, so, I mean, you know, that's an improvement, down 700,000. China's at 47.8, and the rest of the world is up to 41.3. So yeah, we're working down some U.S. or some world stocks, but and China is coming down, but the rest of the world is climbing a little bit higher. You know, a big chunk of that is India. India's up about a little over a million bales during that time frame, and I don't know that that's necessarily that negative in terms of India. I kind of think that the numbers are actually mildly friendly, and you got to ask yourself why. And I don't know. I guess it's the same reason you got to ask yourself, why we're up here with still 90 million bales in stocks and, you know, 50 million bales in China. It just it almost doesn't seem to matter. You've got this speculative community that's just hell bent on being long. And you got the trade who was short, very short in fact, and a lot of on-call sales. And, you know, you're almost at the point of where who can continue to fire bullets at this market in terms of trying to push it down. So I guess it just doesn't really matter what the numbers are right now until you do get something that really scares the heck out of these speculators. I'm not sure what's going to drive this market down.
You know, I think it was Peter Eagley's latest newsletter. He brought that up, and we're at a stalemate here, and who will blink first? Will it be the speculators, or will it be the trade? I mean, we've been sideways for so long. You know, who will blink first? Kip, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's a really good question. Trying to sort that one out is interesting. But if you think about it, the specs really haven't had a lot of satisfaction in this market because of what you said. We've just been sideways since they've gotten long and really, really long. Part of the question is, do they have enough bullets to come after it again? Because I'm not sure, given what we're seeing now. I think this India mill situation, we saw a cut in this report. We may need to cut it again because that currency situation has actually started a bit of retail problems. So I think that, you know, we may get a little bit of a stock increase there. They may have to sell some cotton, is what it amounts to. And if they can't sell more to Pakistan, well, that's kind of Pakistan-India thing is still a bit disconcerting. But we're not sure what's going on, or at least I'm not, maybe someday. That means they're going to have to sell that cotton at a pretty good discount to countries that don't ordinarily take it. So, you know, who's going to blink first? I just don't know. I mean, it's these specs are awfully long, and I think they're going to have to get – somebody's going to have to take this market up for them to feel good about it. Otherwise, I think they're just going to give up and find another place to be.
Well, exports were 400,000 on Thursday. Pretty big numbers.
Whoa, good number. I agree. Think that's going to? I'm going to ask Gerald. Do you think that's going to stay with us? We're going to see this continued sort of U.S. cotton sold. Gerald.
Sorry, I had stuck it on mute there for a second because I didn't want to sneeze into everybody's ears. I do think there seems to be some pretty persistent demand now, but there is just a lot of resistance to paying a very high price for anything. I mean, it seems like just a horrible resistance to go over 80 cents a pound, at least on a fixed price basis. You know, so that's why you're seeing this huge buildup, I think, in these on-call sales. I think everyone feels like this market's got a drop for them, and they'll be able to, you know, price it under 80 cents, and I think a lot of them are hoping under 70 cents at some point in time.
Well, the real question is, what if that doesn't happen? What if the market doesn't dip enough to let people gracefully fix a cotton? What ultimately happens here?
Then I think it, you know, back to Kip's point about, you know, these funds may just get tired and take their money and go to another sandbox. That may be true, but time is on their side. They just have to wait for guys to come to the table and start having to fix.
You know, something was brought up last week is that this level of on-call sales, the last time we saw this was 2010, 2011. This is a lot. And so it's who's got the weak hand? I don't know that either one's got the weak hand, but my experience with these speculators is they don't have to go anywhere if they're not hurting. If they're not in pain, I don't know. They can be pretty patient about this.
Well, now, one thing that may be sort of interesting, and I haven't seen any analysis of this, and Kip, maybe you have, but, of course, at the first of the year, these index funds, they start shifting their weightings around among the ag commodities. I don't know. I would think that cotton would be at a little bit of a disadvantage relative to some of these other commodities. They may dump, you know, lighten up their load a little bit on cotton you know, put a little bit more money in corn or something. Has anyone seen any analysis of that?
I've not seen that.
No.
You're right. They did do the rebalancing, but I do think the cotton probably has a smaller percentage, but I have not seen the numbers.
Yeah,
okay.
I haven't either. I wanted to ask about the exports. To what extent do you think we're simply substituting some what we would be selling in the springtime? We're sort of filling the void that is being created by, you know, India not being able to export because of their currency structural issues. I mean, is this kind of an artificial little thing that we're taking advantage of, and we'll have, you know, lulls next spring? I'm just wondering.
Well, you would think we're going to have some lulls next spring. I mean, West African crop will be coming on strong here pretty soon.
Yeah.
You know, Australia has a much bigger crop than a year ago.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the we better sell as much as we can sell now. That's for darn sure.
Yeah.
We may get in a situation, too, if India gets in. I'm thinking that they may even have a bit more cotton out there than we saw. There's 27 million. That might need to bump up a little bit. If that's the case, at some point, if the ending stocks we're looking at now are accurate, they're going to have to sell some cotton somewhere. They're going to have to move that stuff one way or another. And I'm not – it's something to think about. This is not what I'm projecting right now, but we could, in fact, be in a scenario where this Indian cotton gets so cheap. One, they have to discount because they may not be in traditional markets, and the other is that they just have too much of it. We may wind up getting some cancellations out there with the availability of West Africa and Australian coming on towards the end of the crop year. So that's not something I'm expecting, but it's something I think we need to think about. There's that possibility there.
Let me read something OA sent us. On his latest comments. I'll just go to the final paragraph. He says, nevertheless, cotton prices continue very range-bound and should continue, but with a slight upward bias, as speculative funds now have their largest position of all time. If funds continue to hold, then the upward bias will hold, as mills have dug their heels in and are showing a willingness to pay up. That was just, he had sent that to us and letting us know that he might not be joining us today. He wanted to make sure we had some of his recent thoughts on this. So I just want to make sure to get that out there. Well, any thoughts on price? I mean, we've been range bound, but we're going to finally break one way or another. So let's just talk about the possibilities on the downside, the possibilities on the upside. For the market. John, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I really haven't changed a lot. I do agree with something. I mean, I have heard a few people tell me that kind of with this recent step up to, you know, 71 cent area that they are, you know, they're buying Texas cotton right now. So it says, It does seem to me that we've sort of stepped up slightly higher, that the demand is there, the mills are buying. What that does for futures, I mean, I'm still sort of just between about, you know, in the short run here, I'd say 68 to 72 or so. I think we're going to stay there, and I'm just thoroughly ingrained in the bias of history that I can't imagine what'll bust us out of it one way or the other. But in the short run, that's where I'm looking. And for 17, I'm just spreading that out a bit, going, you know, 65 to 75 or so.
All right, Kip, what are your thoughts on price?
Well, I'm got the same range that he has in the long term, except I might be a little bit. I'm going to kind of seems lazy, I guess, and take a little bit more to the downside. I think a 62, 63 cent might be a reasonable low there, but 75 cents probably is the upside is fine. And near term, I think we just chop around maybe it's 67 to 73 cents, somewhere like that. But there's no real, I don't see any real reason for movement of direction right now. I think I agree with John on that. I hate for us all to sort of be the same. Maybe Gerald has something out here that's different for us.
No,
come on,
I'm just
Gerald.
Sitting there thinking, I'm thinking, what can I say that's a little bit different, you know? 75, if we can ever get above 72 cents for a sustained period of time, yeah, 75 cents is very doable. But we got to get through 72 cents and stay there for more than 10 minutes. So 72 to 75 cents, let's put it that way. I think that's going to be a real tough area to get into and stay into for any length of time. And, 67 to 69 cents should hold the bottom side. So, we're just going to just continue to twiddle our thumbs here for a while, I guess. Just can't figure out what would lead the speculators to go to a complete washout of this market.
Yeah. Well, I see here, and since we go around and ask the question of where we could go, OA's, what he sent us here on his latest newsletter is 67.50 to 73.50 is the range, with the inner part of that where the bulk of the activity at 70 to 73. So we'll just want to make a note of what his thoughts were on price. Any other thoughts? Any other comments?
One thing I want to ask about on the Chinese mill use, I've seen, they increased, they being USDA, increased Chinese mill use in this report. Their exchange rate is very, very weak, and, we're starting to see a pretty good movement of their textile exports. I'm wondering if that is sustainable. I mean, are we in a situation where China could very quickly bring these stocks down? Gerald mentioned earlier, we're heading in the right direction, but it seems like we're painfully slow in getting these stocks down. Are we in a scenario where they could actually, what's the potential of them really coming on and pushing some exports out and really bringing these stocks down? Any thoughts on that?
I don't think they are going to export any cotton.
I meant to say textiles. Pardon me. I may have said that, but I misled you.
Well, I'm wondering if that's what's leading the U.S. in terms of its slowdown, in yarn spinning. Just the fact that everything's, because no doubt there was some of this yarn spinning, I think, at one point in time that was headed back to China. And so maybe that's what's, partly explains why we're being reduced here in the United States, is they're just, combination of currency, and they're just picking up the pace over there in China. I guess the long answer to your question is, I have no idea. Something a little earlier before we got on the podcast here, the radio broadcast, you guys were talking about polyester. Would you repeat what you were saying about the polyester, Kip?
Oh, just the prices have rallied here short term pretty big, in, particularly in the futures market in China, and that part of that is tied to the OPEC agreement, which has fired crude oil prices up. I think that's more a short-term deal here, because we all know that these futures markets in China are really highly speculative, and I think we got excited about this. Typically, the relationship between high crude oil prices and high and polyester prices is not very good. It's matter of fact, it's almost non-existent. What tends to happen is when prices go up, the refineries want to capture the higher price by, of course, refining more, and that increases the feedstock supply for polyester, and so they're just sitting there printing money, kind of putting prices where they can. Typically, that will actually put a bit of pressure on the polyester prices. Near term, though, I've got to believe with the exchange rate and most of the chemical fibers being produced in China, it's going to help those textile mills to, I don't know whether they're going to have a higher percentage of polyester in it, but I don't think they're going to lose much because it'll be in their domestic currency and their textile exports increase. I think that, I don't think these polyester prices are going to stay up for very long, but it's certainly helping cotton in the short term in China anyway, as far as mill use. I think that's what we were discussing before, Gerald. Is that what you were?
Yeah, yes, yes. You
know? So that's kind of, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just asking for any other thoughts.
John, that was quite an increase in the Texas production. In fact, it was probably a couple of 100,000 bales larger than some pretty optimistic forecasts out there. Were you anywhere near 7.4?
No. No, and I expected that that the October adjustment might have reflected. We've heard all this anecdotal discussion of how it's a good crop out there. It's a good crop when they mean northwestern Texas. So I was fully expecting the October adjustment to happen, and I really wasn't thinking there was that much more to increase, but apparently there is. I've heard there are a couple of other commercial estimates of 7.4 that were out there, so they were right.
Well, they had a really good growing season this year, and when you have a long tail on it like that, I think, we always wind up getting a little bit more than we expect. I mean, and I say that on average, I think it was a really good growing season for them. Not very many years where we have that much consistent rainfall. Some of that dry land that oftentimes will, get abandoned. I think, we're not only going to get more of it, the yields are a little bit better. That's anecdotal, of course, but...
Yeah, correct. And it's coming in late. They got, they got an August rains, and then they got the Indian summer maturation period that they needed, so it's coming in later. So I guess it shouldn't be surprising that, we're realizing more and more production at this time of the year, because that was just the nature of how the crop matured.
Quick question for Gerald on marketing this very high-quality crop this year. Exports have been really good, but I've been kind of buffaloed about how in the world are we marketing this super high-grade crop. It seems like we have a just extremely high percentage of high grades, and you mentioned earlier that mills are really reluctant to pay a high price. So, I see some contradictions going on there. How's that?
Well, it's just compressing the differences, compressing the discounts or the premiums, whatever you want to say, between the high grades and the low grades. 35%, one out of every three bales right so far this year in the United States is a 31.3, 36 or better, which is just astounding. Worldwide, machine picked harvest is up 6 million bales versus a year ago. You look at Australia, 4.5 million bales versus, 2.9 or something last year, just under 3. There's going to be a lot of high-quality cotton floating around. And there's just a big resistance to paying a very high landed basis. I mean, landed Korea, the basis has been pretty persistent. All they want to buy, it seems like, is a 31.3, 37, and they've been paying and getting to pay, $10.50 to $11.00 on. Landed Korea. Now, you start backing that back to, a grower price, and, it's not real pretty. On the other hand, you're hearing some reports out there on seeing it, I guess, on the scene, paying some unusually large premiums on, less than desirable cotton, off grades. So, you definitely have a compression there in price between the low grades and the high grades. I guess that's how you get rid of it, Kip. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's challenging, and that's why I ask. I mean, you're right there on the firing line, and we have to see some of that basis compression. We know that, but I just farmers tend to get really reluctant when they go, "Oh my gosh, I've been waiting all these years to get this great crop, and damn, everybody's got it now." So
yeah, I know that's.
Any other comments?
I think that about does it for me.
All right. Well, sorry, OA Cleveland had technical difficulties today and could not join us, but we our panel filled in. We want to thank our panel, thank our speakers, and also thanks to our sponsor, Bayer, for bringing this program to you. And thank you, our listeners, for joining us today. That concludes our meeting today of the Ag Market Network. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat.
Thanks, Pat.